can't tell if the chemistry's good by looking at it. It wasn't clear yesterday. For the last time, the saltwater pool is a chlorine pool.
This is the Talking Pools Podcast with pool pros from every region in the country. If it happens in a pool, you'll hear about it here. Everything from tips and hacks to the latest tricks and trends. Breaking news, we lay it on the line. We tell it like it is because we think you deserve to know.
And now, buckle your seatbelts. It's time to dive into the continuation of last week's episode where we joined the conversation in progress.
I think the thing is we're all guilty, or I suppose a lot of people are guilty at the start when we first start out, is we look at what are other people charging. And some people wrongly think that they need to be the cheapest to secure the work. And look, that... people who compete on price, it is a fast race to a losing race, or a loss, I should say, because it's a race to the bottom. And you're undervaluing yourself. Like, let's face it, if you see a product that is really cheap and yet a product that appears to be like slightly better quality, better presented, more professional, is charging a lot more, what does that make you think of that product that's cheap? It makes you think there's something wrong with it, that it's inadequate, that it's incomplete, that it's going to be poor quality or poor standard. So, like, undervaluing yourself can actually be your demise. And so, but the biggest demise of all, and I'm so glad to hear that you do it, Peter, is you do look at complete costs, is people don't look at the complete costs. And when they add them up, it is really scary. And I've been sitting here as we've been talking, I've been doing some calculations. So don't want to inundate people with figures because I don't want to create confusion. But what I did was I started with $50,000 and went, okay, if I wanted to make $50,000 a year, how much would I need to charge per hour to achieve that? Now, most people would go, okay, divide 50,000 by 52 weeks of the year. It's $960 a week. Divide that by 38 hours. That's $25.30 an hour. That's what you think. That's not what you need. Like, that's not what you need to earn. That's not what you need to charge. It's nowhere near it. It's actually quite scary. When you add into it $1,000 for workers' compensation insurance, because that's 2%, then you add in 17% of your holiday leave, and I'm only talking holiday leave here, that's another 653. Super is 11% of your overall income, which is 5,500. So all of that adds up to $57,000. Then you take into account your vehicle. Now, you're saying, Peter, you've got the vehicle costs, you've got registration, you've got insurance, you've got fuel, you've got servicing. That comes out to about $25,000 a year on average. So if you allow $12,000 for a lease, which is about $1,000 a month, which is not unheard of, rego, $1,200 for the year, that's your green slip and your registration, which makes up in New South Wales anyway, your two parts of your rego.
No idea what a green slip is, but...
that's your roadworthy. That's your roadworthy certificate to make sure your vehicle's actually safe to be on the road. You've got to pay insurance. Rego, but you pay green slip insurance. I got that wrong. Green slip insurance is actual insurance so that if you crash your car into somebody else and you are not insured, that other person will get something. Like, it's like a third party insurance. Yep.
Yeah.
Or it might just be for people, not for property. But anyway, I don't know. I just pay it. So then you've got your normal insurance, like your comprehensive full insurance. That's $2,000 a year on average. Let's pull a figure out of the air. $5,000 for fuel is less than $100 a week, which for some people that's probably nowhere near enough. And then you add on your servicing and your tires and all of that. So you can safely say $25,000 So that's $500 a week, roughly, approximate, just doing rounded figures. $500 a week just on vehicle, on top of your wages. We haven't even started to look at admin, like your admin to run your business. Do you have somebody who does your bookkeeping? Do you have somebody that does your job booking? Do you like overheads? Do you have a storage warehouse? Now I'm talking here for a service. Obviously for a retail, it's a complete different game.
It's a no-brainer.
You've got that retail premises that you're paying rent on. You're paying for your shop staff. You need to add all of that together and divide it by your number of service technicians. So,
and not forgetting, like I said, with the vehicles, replacements.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Replace the vehicle, replace the light loads, replace the shelving units on which you keep stuff because the Cal Hypo fumes corrode them. All of these things.
Yep.
So, your vacuum head, your vacuum hose is eventually going to get a hole in it.
Yeah.
All of these things, and it's the little things that add up very, very quickly.
And so the other thing is, though, going back to the annual wages. So when I did the $57,000, you can't divide that by 52 because, as you said, Pete, 4 weeks a year annual leave, 2 weeks a year of personal leave, and 2 weeks a year of public holidays, or 10 working days, that is. So then so we take those weeks out. So 52 weeks comes back to being 44 weeks. Now let's face it, how many of us in a seasonal business operate 44 weeks of the year doing the exact same servicing week in, week out? Very, very few. Most people have a seasonal time of the year where servicing really backs off. To what degree depends on where you're located in the country. Some it's very little downtime, others it's a lot. So for the sake of this argument, I actually went, let's take 8 weeks out. Let's take, say, like June, July, it's the coldest time of the year, or July, August. Let's take them out. So that's another 8 weeks we take out. So from 52 weeks of the year, we actually come back to 36 weeks of the year that we can actually earn an income, that we're actually on the road earning a wage or having the ability to earn an income, let's say. Now, when you divide that by hours in the day, and let's say 6 hours a day is what you can actually charge for, because let's face it, if we've got a staff member, they're working eight, they've probably got half an hour stacking their vehicle, half an hour emptying their vehicle, and they've probably got an hour of travel in between, lunch breaks, afternoon tea, whatever might come into play. It works out to $52.90 an hour. That's not with any costs of running a vehicle in there. That is just wages. Because we need to make hay while the sun shines. So when the weather's good and we're making doing lots of jobs, we've got money coming in, we need to make sure that we're charging enough at that time to cover our slowest or our non-earning times of the year, whether that be annual leave when we're away, our sick days, our slow times of the year when there is rain, things like that, where it's inclement weather and you can't work. We still have to cover those days. We still have to pay our staff and we still want an income. So we have to make sure that we adjust our prices accordingly. So, yeah, very quickly goes from being $25.30 an hour to being $52.90 an hour as the actual cost per hour for the hours that we're earning. Scary.
It's a huge increase.
It adds up very quickly.
It's double. It's scary. It's double.
Also, I think it was last week when we were recording, there was a lightning storm, and I was watching it on my tracker up in the northeast of the metro area. Anyway, as the afternoon progressed, this storm went down the eastern side of the metropolitan area. It took out power in some areas for a few days. It damaged the infrastructure.
Oh, wow.
Now, if you've got a very tight route and you're in that area and you can't, you have no power for a few days, you are very limited in what you can do in those days. So it's the inclement weather plus any carry-on effect from it.
Yeah, completely.
And I'm scared to think what happens in a cyclone area or tornado area, depending on which hemisphere you're in. It can be, it's very hard to charge a customer for turning up when there's no power, when there's a power cut. I've done it on occasion. But when their whole suburb is down, that's a very tough thing.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think people really need to be aware of their true costs. Like not thinking, oh, look, I'm happy with $30 an hour in my pocket. Like there's so much more to it than that. They really need to do the homework and sit down and work the figures out and really include everything, because you're only going to do yourself an injustice by not doing it properly. You're going to be working your ass off and getting nowhere fast, or going backwards fast. Or
backwards fast.
Yeah. So it's really important. So this topic came up to me as something that was really important, because I constantly see posts on the Talking Pools page or the Master Builders pool service page where people are talking about price. And I know that there's people that are really staunch on charging what they're worth. Like they've done their research. They know what they need to charge. And then these buggers that have really no idea come in and undercut them. And it really hurts, because it's not like I'm trying to rip somebody off by charging them more. I actually just need to charge this to actually cover all my costs and keep myself in business so that I can continue to service your pool. I'm not ripping you off. This guy who wants to undercut me by 50% won't be here next year or the year after. Or maybe they're not paying their insurances properly. Maybe they're not paying their taxes properly. I don't know, but how in the hell they do it for any length of time without pricing properly, it's not good for our industry.
My old man used to call them fly-by-nighters.
Cowboys.
They'd come into the industry. Sorry, I missed that.
Cowboys. The Americans might not like that. The Texans.
No, maybe not. The Dallas. At least we didn't call them rednecks. But we've seen it. We saw it in pool manufacture. I see it now in servicing and mobile service. These people who come in, want to make a big fuss, stay in the game for about a year, then realize, A, they're not making as much money as they thought they would. B, it's physically much more demanding than a lot of people think. A lot of people think, oh, they see you vacuuming a pool or skimming the surface. No, there's a lot of other stuff we do that really is hard work.
Yeah.
And that's why so many of them come into it and then out of the industry within 6 months, a year.
Yeah.
2 years maybe.
Absolutely. I was going to say, there's that vicious circle, though, of we need to pay our staff enough to retain them, to attract them. Like, I know that's always a topic of conversation, whether it be in the Northern Hemisphere or the Southern Hemisphere. How much do we pay our service technicians? As any good business owner knows, you want to pay them enough, but you don't want to pay them too much. it's that fine line. And sometimes remuneration can come in more ways than just a dollar figure. So I think people need to look at that too. But it's not until we're seen as a recognised trade and recognised experts that people will truly value what we do. And by people coming along and undercutting others and being those inexperienced, undervalued service technicians, it's just doing our whole industry a disvalue. So it's tough.
Yeah. When a customer inquires and they start off with how much for this, what's your price for servicing? What's your price on this item? Especially when they say, what's your best price? I say, well, a couple of times I said, what, best for you or best for me? I never like that. But when they start with clearly wanting the bottom price, I just respond, if you're after cheap, I'm not your guy. There are plenty of cheap ones out there. I focus on quality.
Yep.
And that's the view more of us should be taking in this industry.
Yep.
And a couple of times people have – the people who stumble across my website or something, they're the ones who typically are looking for a bargain, looking for cheap. The vast, vast majority of my customers are come to me through referral or recommendation.
So what does that tell you, Peter?
I'm doing something right.
No, absolutely. Word of mouth, you're doing everything right, but it tells me that your website is not upmarket enough.
I think it actually looks pretty good, but I've made a point of not promoting my website because I can't keep up with customer inquiries that are just organic from recommendation. Mm. So when every afternoon these idiots ring up, oh, we'll see your website's not on the first page of Google. Well, first thing I say is, well, it is in my area. What country are you calling from? But also I tell them the worst thing for me would be to have my website too accessible, because I'll just spend even more time each day telling customers, telling inquirers, I can't fit you in.
Mm. I'd waste too much time on the phone,
just like I'm doing now talking to you, you silly twit. Now piss off. I don't like cold callers.
No. No, like
your opinions, guys, on quotes. So when we started the company, we were advertising pre-quotes, but it's come to that stage now where we want to move away from there, because what we're finding is there's, like you said, Peter, there's too many people calling up wanting cheap. You know, they see they see the word free. As soon as they see the word free, you know, they're calling because they want cheap. So in regards to when you guys, you know, when you're on Roadly, when you're at your business, was that something that you would charge for? You would charge for on-site visit quotes or quote invite email? I've come to that point where I'd say to the client, if you can send me a photo, whatever you want replacing, you know, I can quote you over the phone. That's no problem. But if you need me to come on site, spend time, you know, there's going to be a call out fee, there's going to be a bit of labor charge in that as well.
Yeah, look, I don't see a problem with that. If you need to go on site to do a quote, and all you what you can do is you can say my quote fee is $100. I'm just plucking a figure out of the air here, but you can say my quote fee is $100. However, should you decide to proceed with the quote, that will be deducted off the quoted price. Because I'm assuming that they've paid it before you do the job, of course. It will be waived if you go ahead with the quote, or if you've paid it, it will be deducted off the quote price. Mm-hmm. And obviously you just factor into your quote price the time that it took you to do the quote. So, I don't have a problem with that, because a lot of builders, house builders, don't know about pool builders, but in our area, house builders are in high demand, as I assume they are everywhere. And they are now charging a lot of money to do a quote. And they will, if people go ahead with it, it comes off their quote, because like a house quote can take hours to do, as you can imagine. So it's completely understandable. And that to me is showing that you value what you do and you do it properly. So I don't have a problem with it. What do you think, Peter?
With pools here, some of the concrete builders will charge a fee because the design's a lot more involved. Mm. I've never heard of a fiberglass builder charging for a quote. Unless there's, you know, a very long travel time or something. But fiberglass, they're molded, so you know what it's going to be. All you really have to do is work out what machine you need to use to dig the hole, access, and that comes into it, much like any concrete pool or whatnot. What size crane, where you can park it. you know, what's needed to be done? Do they need to remove grass? Do they need to remove pavers or cut concrete up? Do they need to remove gardens? All of these sorts of things there. I've never heard of a fiberglass builder successfully charging for quotes within the metro area. Mm. But concrete, where there's a lot of design involved, yeah, I reckon they should be charging a quoting fee, a design fee. I was speaking actually with a builder that I know very well recently, and he's charging for quotes and designs because, like you say, he might be there for a full day or more working out costings and particularly he does a lot of interiors. So if you've got various types of timber and features and electrical fittings, that takes a while to quote.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's not like somebody says, I need a new 1-horsepower pump to replace this model. Okay, well, I recommend this model, which is that much.
Yeah.
Because you don't have to, change any pipe work. It's probably a 5-minute job.
Yeah.
So it all comes down to the how involved it is.
Yeah, completely. Completely.
Mm-hmm.
When somebody wants a quote on a green pool recovery.
Never.
Different story. Never quote.
No.
I'll say how so long, much per hour.
How long is a piece of string?
Yeah.
That's my answer.
So much per hour plus chemicals. And I get them all the time. Can you give me a price?
No.
Well, based on experience, I don't know because I can't see what's in the pool. I can't see what debris is there.
You haven't tested the water, so you can't tell the balance.
No. You don't know what chemicals you need. That's another one. Oh, what my pool surface? How much will chemicals cost? I don't know. I don't know the water. But with green pools, I say, it might be anywhere from 150 up to $3,000. Who knows? Because generally they fall within that scope. But the number of people who, my pool's green. Okay, how big's your pool? I don't know. Okay, are we talking a plunge pool? Are we talking something Olympic-sized? There's a lot of variables there.
And they just say, just a normal size.
drunk, that's, yeah.
It's fun.
Well, you'd be pleased to know I don't charge a set price for green pool recoveries, guys.
Good. That's
excellent.
Good. You get a nice tick with that one, Shane. But I've actually done this pricing, interestingly enough. I actually did it years and years and years ago with a staff member who said to me he wanted more money. Now, he said, I think I deserve a pay rise. And I knew why he needed a pay rise, and that was because he wasn't living within his means. And
right.
So I sat him down and I said, okay, I actually sat down and did the figures with him and said, okay, this is how much you think you cost me an hour because that's what you get. But that's not what you cost me. And I sat down and I did all the maths with him, worked out the workers' comp, the leave loading, the superannuation, his time off on holidays, his sick leave, the whole lot. And so when I sat down and I actually showed him that he was costing me about, I think it's on average about 37% more than what they think they're getting is what the actual cost is. And we're only here talking wages. I'm not talking about the cost of running the business and the cost of the vehicle, but the 37%. And then I showed him what the vehicle costs were for him to do his job, and we broke it down to a per job price. And then I said to him, okay, so now you can actually see what you cost me. So if you want a pay rise, I'm happy to give it to you. But how are we going to be able to afford it? And that comes by you either being more efficient and getting more jobs done in the day, or by you adding on service work to the services that you're doing. So it might be where we didn't do a vacuum, he'd talk the customer into around to a vacuum. So doing those sort of things. So, yeah, it was a really valuable thing to sit down and do with my staff, and so that they could actually see the costs of running a business. And it wasn't that I was a tight ass and not paying them enough. They actually, for me to pay them more money, they had to bring more money in. How were they going to do that? And that's what I challenged him with. And I said, okay, I will happily pay you more, but I need you to bring in more. So how are you going to go about doing that? And, yeah, and he was receptive to that, completely receptive to it. So it's worth doing that exercise. But, yeah.
Have you ever had customers say, oh, that's your hourly rate? I wish I took home that much an hour. And I'd say, I wish I took home that much an hour.
Yeah.
You know, the truck doesn't run on unicorn farts. You know, there are so many other costs. And the trick, I think, is to not be as blunt as say it like I just did, but explain, look, the costs of doing this.
Yeah.
And then when they say, oh, but the other guy can do it for, you know, 60% of that, okay, have you seen his insurance paperwork? Mm. Have you seen that he's covered? I mean, I've got $20 million of public liability insurance, which we need here for commercial pools typically. Mm. You know, are you protected in that way? You know, how much do they spend on training? How much do they spend on development? Do they make sure their equipment's always maintained, or are they going to get here and say, oh, sorry, my pump's burned out, my service pump's burned out, I can't do the job? You know, that's always, always a challenge.
There's people actually don't see the bigger picture.
Yeah, no, that's right. Mm. There's actually, I have a saying that used to be on a sign above my desk, and it is, my prices are based on my knowledge, skills, and expertise in this line of work.
Yeah, that's fair.
So if my price is low, that means my knowledge, my skills, and my expertise are low. If it's high, then it's high. Well, that's my theory anyway. Some people charge high and don't have high, but yeah.
Yeah. I'm reminded of a few jobs actually where I've gone in and fixed the problem within seconds. Most commonly, where you've got a pump basket that isn't lined up correctly, stops the lid from the lid O-ring from sealing.
Yeah.
So of course the pump won't work. Oh. That's the first thing I check nowadays.
Or the basket ran there, the wrong way with the hole facing the basket.
Yes, yes, that's another one. Yeah. Happens so many times.
We need to do an episode on this, I think, guys.
How to insert a pump basket? If you don't want a list, you can insert it somewhere else. I didn't say that. I'd like to. But when they say, oh, what do you mean you're charging me, you know, for an hour? Well, my minimum call out's 1 hour because I have spent driving time. You called me out quickly. On a Sunday, for example, I'll slap a big emergency fee onto that. And if they don't want it, fine, they can find someone else who wants to to work on a Sunday.
You have to value yourself.
Oh, but look, it's not just the time. It's you're paying me for knowing that where to look first.
Absolutely.
The experience to where to look.
Yeah.
There's, I don't know if, got to watch what I say here. There's a couple of pull services where I'm convinced they go around and pull the cables out of the back of the chlorinator. You know, the ones that clip in with the little brass fittings? Mm. You see them a lot on Astral. Nothing wrong with them, but I'm sure there's a couple of guys who go around and just pull the cable out and say, oh, your chlorinator's not producing, you need a new one. The number of new customers I've gained because I've gone in, reconnected and say, there you go, I put the wire back in, it's producing. But so many of them aren't happy when I charge them a call out fee for that. Well, you've taken my time. I've just saved you, you know, a couple of grand on a new chlorinator.
Yep.
Where is the problem here?
Mm-hmm. Completely.
They very quickly change their mind, typically, after that. Mm. I did have one guy. He was a float tank, you know, flotation studio.
Yeah.
And he was after some he needed a bit of pipe repaired. And his float tanks were manufactured, I believe, in the UK. Now, over here, what we call 40 millimetre isn't true 40 mil. It's actually inch and a half because we used to use the Imperial system. In the UK, it is true 40 mil. Same as 50 mil for us is 2 inch, not true 50 mil. That's why some unions, you see the differing thicknesses. Your first half of the union is to push the pipe in, is a little bit bigger, and then the inside bit is just a fraction smaller. It's to account for the international market. And I said, look, I'll need to see if I can find those fittings because they're just not approved over here. Anyway, he rang me up about a week later. He said, oh, yeah, I found a plumber who had those parts, and he managed to fix it. But I'd like you to come have a look at a couple of other bits. And I said, well, if he's set up to – this plumber's set up to fix it, he's got the parts for it, why not go to him? Cheeky bugger said, oh, because he charges when he comes out. I said, and you don't think I will? I was quite dumbfounded by that. Literally saying, I expect you to come out, solve my problems, and not charge me for it. Pete, he can stick his flotation tank somewhere else.
Pete, can I wrap up today's podcast?
Of course you can.
I just want to, say that it's a vicious circle that until pool techs are actually seen as a recognised trade or profession with qualifications, the general public, i.e. customers, won't value what we do high enough to pay a decent market rate for pool services. While there are people out there that don't understand how to price their services properly, and I'm meaning here pool technicians and pool service companies, they will race others to the bottom in an undercutting race where everyone except the customer loses. We as an industry have to value ourselves first, raise the bar across the board, raise the level of professionalism to raise the respect, raise our price to reflect our not level of expertise and knowledge, and then the general public will raise their perception of us as a trade and appreciate our value. So,
100%.
Thank you, Bailey.
So please, people out there, value yourself first. No one else will value you until you value what you do first.
Couldn't agree more.
It's a topic I'm passionate about, sorry.
And rightly so. Like I say to people, we're not a charity.
We're a profession. We're experts in pool water.
And equipment. And pipe work.
And lots of things.
And all sorts of things.
Pool installations.
So that draws us to
that
a close.
Much sums it up. That it does. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone, out there for listening.
Or just say happy, is it Australia Day?
Australia Day.
Australia Day on Friday. Yes. It will have just been by the time this broadcasts. So.
Okay.
We'll be holding 3-day Australia long Day. Hangovers.
And today will be Auckland Anniversary Day. So, throw that one in there.
Just across the ditch, and we nearly share an anniversary.
Almost.
Well, thanks, guys.
No worries. Thank you. Yeah. Everyone, thank you for listening out there. Please send your topic requests or questions to talkingpools@gmail.com, and the most appropriate host on the most appropriate episode will deal with it. Deal with answering that. For now, have a fantastic week. Look after yourselves. Be safe out there. Make lots of money. Baroo.
Bye, guys.
Bye bye.
I just wanted to take a minute to say thank you for listening today. I'm hoping you enjoyed the episode as much as we enjoyed putting it together for you. Listen, it's been a couple of wacky, crazy, screwed up years from pandemic to Poolmageddon. I just want you to know that we are all in this together. If there's anything that we can do for you, send me an email at talkingpools@gmail.com. Again, that's talkingpools@gmail.com. We're here. This is your podcast. We are the Pool People's Podcast, of the pool people, for the pool people, by the pool people's podcast. This one is about you. So thank you for tuning in and listening. Do me a favor, click subscribe before you go. That way you don't miss an episode.